From an undisclosed location high in the Hollywood Hills, it's time once again for the long shot. Tonight, it's Sunday Fun Day. Jared Kushner, Bunting, plus very special guest. You'll find out. And now, please welcome the host of the long shot, Sean Conroy.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, good night, good noon, good dawn, good day, good dusk, good desk. Welcome to The Long Shot. It is a podcast. I am your host. My name is Sean Conroy. With me today on the show, the shadowy shaman of shanties, the shapeless shah of shantytown, the sharpest shark in the shed, the shiny sheepshank sheik of the whole shebang, the shaky shibboleth of shirts. Sean Conroy. I am the only one here today. I am the only one. Can you tell I prepared because I was the only one here? Usually I can rely on everybody else to be here, but today I am by myself. I believe we will be hearing later checking ins from Jamie Flam and, of course, the great Joe Wagner. But for now, you are stuck with me. So if you don't like it, turn it off. And if you do like it, turn it up. We're recording this on April 7th, 2019. And of course, you know what that means. Happy birthday, Billie Holiday. It is, of course, also the 70th anniversary of the opening of South Pacific on Broadway. Bali High. Going to wash that man right out of my hair. I'm trying to think of what else was... Strangers in the Night. No, that was not it. But there's some song about how they see each other from across the room or something like that. Speaking of music, while I was trying to prepare for this show, I turned on a Spotify playlist that's called Sunday Fun Day. And the first song that came on to give you a Sunday Fun Day was Stuck in the Middle with You by Steeler's Wheel, which to me is not a fun song. I mean, that's the song where Michael Madsen cuts off that guy's ear in Reservoir Dogs. So that struck me as odd. So I pressed fast forward and because I was like, who is making the decision about what Sunday Fun Day, you know, what are they going to play? I fast forward to the next song, which was John Wayne Gacy Jr. by Sufjan Stevens. So then I saw where they were coming from. Sufjan, is it really, isn't that a little pretentious, by the way, Sufjan? Shouldn't it just be Sufjan? Anyway, I think next time I'll just listen to the Baila Reggaeton playlist. Speaking of playlists, I was at the gym yesterday. Sorry to make people feel bad for not being as active as I am. And I was trying to figure out what I should listen to. And again, I put on a Spotify playlist and it was like 90s pop rock. And I was like, let me see what this is. It was great. So fun, you know? I mean, how can you not get a kick out of that music? Two Princes, Save Tonight by Eagle Eye Cherry came on, which I think naming a kid Eagle Eye is putting a lot of pressure on him. Because what if he is, you know, what if he has to wear glasses? I'm Gonna Be came on, which a lot of people think is called 500 Miles, by the Proclaimers, which reminded me of a time that I was out with some friends in New York City. And this was back when I was young and skinny and had giant glasses. And these guys wanted to fight us and they kept on calling me Proclaimers. Which is like, I get it, but I also don't think that's such a big insult. It's like, oh, so you compare me to successful 90s pop rock musicians from Scotland. Thank you. I still want to know what heavering means. And then, of course, you know, a Nirvana song came on, which reminded me that this week was the 25th anniversary of the death of Kurt Cobain, which, you know, it's weird because everybody always talks about how they knew where they were when Kennedy was assassinated. And that was such a memorable thing. Well, for me, I remember exactly where I was when I heard that Kurt Cobain was dead. I was living in New York City at the time. I was jogging. And again, not to make people feel bad about how active I am, but I was jogging by the East River. At that time, I had a yellow, do you remember those yellow sports Walkmen? Does anybody remember those? Andrew's nodding his head. That's good. And I had one of those and I was listening to the radio. That was back when people actually listened to commercial radio when they were doing physically active things. I feel like nobody would ever do that now. And if you are somebody who disagrees with me, please tweet me at Sean Conroy and let me know that you listen to commercial radio on your headphones. I don't even know how you would do that. Like on my iPhone, I'm like, I don't think I could possibly, I guess there's probably an app for FM radio or something. But anyway, it was really sad. Like I remember being very taken aback by the fact that he had killed himself, obviously. And what also really startled me when I heard, we were basically exactly the same age. Isn't that weird to think about that was how old he was, back then, 25 years ago. I don't know. Maybe it's just weird for me, but I guess it's because I always think of successful people as older than me, which is weird because Justin Bieber is not older than me. Yeah, Kurt Cobain. I mean, I did love Nirvana. I did. I remember I had a record, like a vinyl record that I had found when I was in Europe. It was not available in the US and it was like B-sides and rarities. I mean, that wasn't the name of it, but it had a bunch of songs on it that I had not heard before. And I was very excited when I got that. Other things that made me think of the death of Kurt Cobain, I was still teaching at that time and there was a group. We used to have visiting artists come into the room and it was great for the kids if they could focus for 5 seconds and I would be running around trying to get them to focus. But I don't even remember what this presentation was, but it was like a poetry thing or something. And they, they said to the kids, if you do what we want you to do, then we can do something fun at the end. And the fun thing they wanted to do at the end was go through Smells Like Teen Spirit line by line and sort of figure out the meaning of each of the lines. And the kids, you know, these were like inner city kids. They were not Nirvana fans. But they really, you know, I don't think they got it all the way. What really stuck out to them was the whole line about a mulatto, an albino, a mosquito, my libido. They were like, what are they talking about, Mr. Conroy? And, you know, that was a whole can of worms because we had to talk about mulattoes versus albinos and how, you know, they weren't exactly opposite. Like a mixed race person is not the opposite of somebody who is completely white, but it's dissimilar in some way. And then a mosquito versus Kurt Cobain's libido. Like it was just like a can of worms that I did not want to get into. So I was kind of like, fuck you guys to the people who came in, but it was fine. It was fine. Anyway, that was what I was listening to while I was at the gym. I also saw this woman at the gym who I see there frequently, and I know her from somewhere, but I could never remember. Like, we always smile at each other and wave and say hello, but I could never remember where I know her from. Then yesterday I went to, you know, a few hours after the gym, I went to a cafe that I had not been to in a long time. And there was a woman there who I was like, I know her from somewhere, but I don't know from where. And I realized it was the same woman. I knew this woman from the cafe and I knew her from the gym. And that was how. So I went up to the counter and I said, "You were at the gym this morning." And she was like, "Yeah, I ran there right before work." And it was such a relief to finally figure out. Excuse me. It was such a relief to finally figure out where we knew each other from. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is I want to check in. And for my checking in today, I want to recommend a podcast for you guys to listen to. And it's this one. No, I'm kidding. You're already listening to this one. Are you? Weird Existential Crisis. I want everybody. And you guys know how obsessed with this stuff I am, but I think this is actually worth your time. Trumpcast, which is a Slate podcast, many of which are available for free. Not all of them anymore, but many of them. I listened to an episode, and I don't know the number of the episode, and I don't know. It came out last week sometime. The host is a woman named Virginia Heffernan, who's very charming. And the guest was a woman named Vicky Ward. Now, if you don't know who Vicky Ward is, and I bet you don't, because I didn't, and I know more than you. Vicky Ward is an investigative journalist. She's been a writer and an editor, and she has worked for lots of different publications and websites and so forth. Anyway, she just came out with a book that is called Kushner Inc. Greed, Ambition, Corruption: The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. And like, we've all heard a bunch of stories about these people, but she is an investigative journalist, and this is what they were talking about, is she's very good at getting to know people around the people she's interested in and getting them to talk. She's very charming. She's British, so of course she's very charming. And the podcast is about 40 minutes long, I think, maybe less, maybe 39. It was terrifying because it's not surprising that this is a grift for these people, right? It's not surprising that this is a way for them to make money. But the way that they are going about it, and I'm not really talking about Ivanka, I'm talking about Jared Kushner. That dude is a straight up thug. He is mafia. I mean, he seems like such a waify little boy, but when you hear some of the shit that this guy has pulled, it's terrifying. They were talking about how, well, first of all, the Kushner family, obviously we all know that Jared Kushner's father went to jail because he set his brother-in-law up with a prostitute and taped it and sent it to his sister so that he could blackmail them. And he was sent to federal prison for several years for that. So that's fucking thug shit, right? But one of the points that Vicky Ward was making was that the family's whole ethos is formed by what happened to the grandparents during the Holocaust. Because apparently Jared Kushner's grandmother, whose name was something Kushner, and I mean that was her birth name. So when she got married, her husband took her name. Again, that's some fucking thug shit, right? She was living in Poland when the Nazis invaded. The Nazis put all, I forget where they were living exactly, because I haven't read the book. I am going to get the book. But put all the, you know, 30,000, we all know what happened in the Holocaust. They rounded up these Jews and put them in a ghetto, to try to keep them there so that they could kill them. And when Jared Kushner's grandmother realized what was going on and some other people, they were like, we got to get out of here. So they basically dug a tunnel underneath the walls of the ghetto to get out because they heard there were some Jews living in the forest nearby. And, you know, at this point, she had seen her mother killed. She had seen her sister killed. As they were escaping, her brother lost his glasses and wandered off in a different direction from the rest of them. And they found out later that he was also killed. And they got into her and the people she was with got into the woods, found this other group of Jews who were living in some kind of improvised bunker out there or something, and lived in the forest for like 2 years. And then the Soviets came in and they were able to leave. But then it took them another 3 years of like horrific traveling through, you know, as refugees through Europe until they finally got on a boat and ended up in America and made it to New Jersey. So the point that Vicki Ward makes is that their family, the way they live is, do not do what people tell you to do. There is no authority. You are your own authority. The rules do not apply to you. So that's how Jared lives. You know, the rules do not apply. And so now we have this guy in charge of the Middle East peace process who gets a security clearance, right? Trump just gave it to him. He was rejected. They weren't going to give it to him. And Trump overrode everybody else's decision. We've all heard the stories about how the Chinese and the Saudis are saying we have Jared Kushner in our pocket. And that's because the other thing you find out in this Trump cast is that he's not a smart guy. Like he seems like the dumb thug, like a dumb, you know, like the kind of guy you would laugh at in a mafia movie, except he is in charge of the Middle East peace process and all the other shit he's in charge of in DC. And he has decided that he doesn't need the CIA around him. He doesn't need to have, you know, he doesn't need to tell people what he's doing. Remember that he was WhatsApping with MBS after the Khashoggi thing. And so the CIA apparently has decided that they're not going to allow him to see, and like without telling him this, they have decided that they're not going to allow him to see the real top secret stuff because they know that he is easily manipulable, if that's a word. Anyway, the whole thing was, the whole thing with that building on Fifth Avenue and how this was about money for him, like getting money for his family to bail his family out. This was his opportunity to get money for his family so they wouldn't go down with this building on Fifth Avenue. And that's the whole reason that he pushed for Trump. He pushed for Trump to make his first international visit to Saudi Arabia. That's the only reason Trump went to Saudi Arabia, was because Jared needed money. Jared's family needed money. She also talked about how Jared was one of the ones who really pushed for Comey to be fired. And that was because his father was so afraid of Comey investigating. Like if Comey started investigating Trump, the father was afraid that he would find out stuff about him. And then he would have to go back to jail. And he was like, I'm not going back to jail. You got to fire that fucking guy. So Jared went to Trump and said, we need to fire him. And it's literally like this woman says on the podcast, you know, this all sounds kind of fanciful, but this woman says on the podcast that she always double sources everything. So she has talked to people who were in the room when this went on. One person she kept bringing up was Gary Cohn, who apparently was horrified to find out all this stuff about Ivanka and Jared and really did everything he could. And another person who was horrified by them and tried very hard to counteract them, and then of course failed and was fired, was Rex Tillerson. You know, because Jared was like, we don't need you, Rex. We're going to do this ourselves. And a lot of it has to do with his father being very pro Netanyahu. His father is a big donor to Netanyahu. And so they're very supportive of Netanyahu. And this is why they moved. This is why they convinced Trump to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I mean, it's just it was scary just because Jared is now running around the Middle East. Nobody knows who he's with or who he's talking to. I mean, I'm sure they're trying to figure that stuff out all the time, but it's like he has been cut loose by Trump to do whatever the fuck he wants. And, you know, as I said, he's not a smart guy. He doesn't understand the subtleties of the things that go on and the relationships and all that stuff. And then my favorite part about that, because I was not really aware of the connection between the Kushner family and Netanyahu and how they were so pro-Israel and all that stuff. And as soon as I heard that podcast, of course, I was watching Fox News and Hannity was on. And Hannity was talking about how lucky the American people are to have two great statesmen who have such a close relationship as Netanyahu and Trump. He said two Churchillian figures. I mean, it is absurd. And I know it's an obsession of mine, but anyway, go listen to the podcast for yourself because I'm not doing it justice. And again, the book is called Kushner, Inc. I wrote Kushner for some reason on my pad, but it's Kushner, Inc. Greed, Ambition, Corruption, The Extraordinary Story of Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. All right. Well, we've come to a part of the show that we like to call Checking In. And even though I'm here by myself, luckily we got Jamie and Joe to call in, as we've done in the past with other people, to call in and leave messages. And so let's maybe listen to a couple of those messages. So let's listen to Jamie first.
This is Jamie Flam, and my checking in for the week, the first week, the end of the first week of April 2019. I'm passing Topa Street in Ojai, California, which is about an hour and a half drive from Los Angeles.
Okay, that's some geography.
My girlfriend. And what is
God.
My checking in? I just hiked to the top of a hill, and I'm so out of shape. So I'm like, and just sunbeaten and all those things. But they're the cutest dog, like, in this garden I'm passing right now, just like a residential house, and these two kids with...
Okay, he has nothing. Keep going.
Nerf guns. Please, spare me. They definitely haven't aimed at me. That's the real thing that just happened. I think I made it out unscathed. It's a beautiful day, and it's a beautiful time of the year and the season, and I guess my biggest checking in the last little bit is I have a girlfriend again. Which, since
again,
I never told anyone that I didn't, there was a point where I didn't have a girlfriend. That's news. But there was about a month where things, you know, go up and down in relationships. And there was a month where we took a break. However you want to, there's a lot more details that go into something like that. But a month to kind of reconvene with myself and my thoughts and figure stuff out. And ultimately, things have worked out. It's a little bit unexpected. But who knows what's to be expected. And I just left her. Doesn't sound very good. Back at the car while I'm walking through as like a group of 17 people with red shirts are riding past me on bikes up on the Ojai Valley Trail. I'm not far from the City of Ojai Visitor Center Museum. There's like a weeping willow kind of tree I'm going under. It's like, could not be more out of a California, visit California book of some kind. There's that. The theater's fine. I went to the Magic Castle last night and thought of other members of the podcast for reasons I don't know have been disclosed on the show. But of course, that place is always enchanting. And I believe that's pretty much my checking in. I think that's enough for Sean to sink his teeth into. I'm trying to think of anything more awkward or weird that's happened. Probably plenty, such as the way I live my life. But you know what? I'm happy and hopeful for the future. And what else could you really ask for? I'm trying to think of one more anecdote or fun fact, but I can't right now. I had a beat.
I had a beat? Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. 90% of Jamie's checking in was about what he was doing in that moment. That's all he had was, I'm walking past a tree. In front of me is a bush. Over there is another bush. Like, that's not the only thing that's happened to you in your life. Then the other part of that that was great was that he goes, I came up here with my girlfriend. That doesn't bode well. He said, there was a point when I didn't have a girlfriend. Let's be honest. There was a lot of points when you didn't have a girlfriend. And I say that as somebody who can sympathize. So I guess Jamie had a girlfriend, and then they were like, we don't know if this is the right thing to do. So they took a break, and then they got back together. I think that can work. I think that can also not work. My experience is they're doomed, but that's just me. I know there are people who where they're like, let's just figure things out. And then when I was dating somebody, honestly, it was while this podcast was on, the Chancellor, it was her, not me. She broke up with me. And I think it was because she knew that she was going to leave at some point, and she just wanted to make a clean break. And so she said, I don't think we should be together anymore. But she had not told me that she was leaving Los Angeles. And so she said, we're done. And I was very upset, you know, but I was like, okay, if that's what you want. And so we were not together anymore. And 10 days went by, and I was in New York City for the Del Close Marathon. And at, you know, midnight or something, I got a text from her. We had not communicated. And I got a text from her that said, I want to see you. And it was this very complicated thing where I was like, okay, I'll see you. But, you know, I think we should do it in a neutral location. Let's do it in Switzerland. In other words, like, if we do it someplace, like, who knows what it could lead to? I basically was saying, you know, obviously we both still really like each other, but if we're going to talk about this, I want it to be somewhere where we're not going to end up, one thing leading to another. And she was like, no, 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 I want to see you and I want to, and whatever. Anyway, the upshot of that was we were back together for the, you know, she was like, I was wrong. I did not want to, you know, this was a mistake. And then we were together for another 3 months and then she left town and, that was the end of it. So I'm saying it can work. Sometimes it doesn't work. So I say, good luck, Jamie. But also, I don't know. Your checking in should be more than something in front of you. It should be more than like what you're looking at in that moment. Like, here's my checking in right now. I'm looking at Andrew. I see some boxes. There's a couple of bags. Ugh. Hopefully Joe's also that beat thing. Like, I had a beat. How is that a checking in? I mean, I ate a vegetable. All right. Hopefully Joe's is better than Jamie's. What is Joe's message?
I was talking about a beet salad when the last recording ended.
What?
It wasn't a beet salad though. It was a Brussels. It was called a Buddha bowl. At a place called, I forget, but...
Can you stop it? Where is Joe's message?
That's the only two I have.
So Joe did not leave a message. After we talked about the fact that I was going to be here by myself and I would need stuff, Joe opted out of leaving a message. Oh, my God. All right, let's hear more about Jamie's Buddha Bowl.
It wasn't a beet salad, though. It was a Brussels. It was called a Buddha Bowl at a place called, I forget. But
great. Great detail.
It was called the Nest. I wanted to talk about, I forgot to mention, I'm definitely checking in. I imagine we'll talk about it when Amber gets back. But I went to her post-courthouse wedding celebration at Cantor's Deli, which was super convenient. I would have gone no matter where it was.
That was the highlight for Jamie, was that it was very convenient.
And it was so lovely to see Amber and Jeff all decked out with their family there in fucking Cantor's. What a special way to celebrate such a special day. And an occasion for our podcast. Fucking Amber got married. That's crazy. 10 years ago, she wasn't married. Now she is. And we've taken that journey, all of us together. I'm still in Ojai. Lots of dogs, lots of bikes.
Oh, God.
We're right by the Westridge Midtown Market where we walked around.
So his checking in about Amber's wedding was she got married. No, let it roll.
Not even to help the story, really. But we eventually ended up with a big bottle of Fiji. Interesting note. One of the major kombucha companies has now upgraded. They're called the McTrilogy. If you're familiar with kombucha, you know the Trilogy. Whatever that brand is, they've expanded with these big bottles now. A little bit too much kombucha for my appetite at this point, but wanted to point that out. look out for these bigger bottles. There's going to be a lot of kombucha for anyone and everyone. So that's exciting.
Nope, it's not.
Anything else to describe? I'm with my girlfriend. She's watching me record this, which is adding an element of performance. I think my energy level is probably higher than it was when I was walking away from her earlier. So that's something. I'm always much more hilarious when I'm in front of other people. It's like our live podcast. Like, from me to room with Sean and Amber and Joe or Eddie back in the day, I'm intimidated, but you put an audience there and all of a sudden I'm fucking zinging like Zinger, as they say. Anyway, I'm going to wrap
it up. Nobody says that.
What? Sorry, my phone was ringing. I thought that was the end of the recording. But take all that and use it any way you like for your own life. And I wish you all the best.
Jake, hang up.
Still recording. I didn't realize. I was turning off the phone that was trying to beep in. Let's get back to that beet salad.
No. Oh, thank God. So just to get this correct, he had a, by the way, he said it was not a beet salad at the beginning of that whole thing. And at the end he said, let's get back to that beet salad. The whole point was that it was not a beet salad. It was Brussels sprouts in a Buddha bowl. I feel like this might be imagine if that's just a thing that Jamie made up to have something to check in with. And that's the best he could do. Was to say, oh, what if I talk about a salad? And then he talked a little bit about Amber's wedding reception. I'm ashamed to say I did not attend Amber's after party. And we'll talk more about that when Amber is back, I'm sure. Because it really bummed me out. I'm sure nobody noticed, but it was really a bummer for me. But anyway, Jamie, like, if you don't have anything to say, say something about a made-up Buddha bowl at the, like, he came up with the idea of a Buddha bowl and a beet salad, and it's not a beet salad, it's a Buddha bowl, but then he forgot to add the detail of where it was. It's like when you catch somebody in a confession and one of the details is missing, and he didn't even try to make up the detail, he just said, I forgot. You know, Mr. Flam, where were you on the night of the murder? I forgot. And I'm still pissed at Joe for not leaving a message. How hard could it be? Well, that's not fair because obviously Jamie made it seem like it is very hard to leave an interesting message for 5 minutes on the phone. All right, folks, this seems like a good place to take a break, so we'll do that, and we'll be right back with a segment on the show that we like to call Parting Shots. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Hey, folks, it's Sean Conroy. You may recognize me from the character I do at the beginning of the show where I'm the announcer, or from hosting the show, or from throwing to Joe and Jamie for checking in. I just wanted to do a quick plug, and I've plugged this before, but I'm going to plug it again, but I'm not going to do it as much as before. Andy Daly and I have a new show called The Great American Cabinet of Curiosities, which we're recording to eventually be released as a podcast. But if you are in LA and would like to come to a show, here are two you could possibly attend, and we'd love to have you there. The first one is April 23rd at 8:30 p.m., and that will be at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater on Sunset Boulevard. And then the second one is on Tuesday, April 30th, and that will be at 9:30 p.m. at Upright Citizens Brigade on Franklin Avenue. So don't get those mixed up. Those UCB theaters are easy to confuse. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to perform at one when I was supposed to be at the other. Again, it's called The Great American Cabinet of Curiosities. See if you can find it on Instagram or on Twitter. And good luck, because Andy did the handles for both of those, and he was like Jamie. Like, he just made them completely unrelated to the show in some way. Or not unrelated, but like, they're both different, which is absurd to me. And they're, neither of them is the name of the show. They're like weird combinations of the name. So, but see if you can find it and follow us. All right. Thanks. Now back to me. We're back. You are listening to The Long Shot. It is a podcast. I am your host, Sean Conroy. I am also your guest and your co-host. So lucky you. It's time for a segment on the show that we like to call Parting Shots. And since it's just me today, I thought I would be a little bit indulgent. So, or self-indulgent, I guess, because since it's only me. My friend Adam Spiegelman posted on Facebook today an old commercial for the Money Store done by Phil Rizzuto. Now, if you don't know who Phil Rizzuto was, I mean, this commercial is from like probably the late 70s. If you don't know who Phil Rizzuto was, he was a shortstop for the New York Yankees, and he played in the 1950s. In fact, he was the American League MVP in 1950. I was just looking up on Wikipedia to have some things to say about him. Apparently, Ty Cobb, and we all know what Ty Cobb's reputation was, right? Just a nasty, mean, racist son of a bitch. Ty Cobb said that Phil Rizzuto and Stan Musial were two of the few major leaguers of his time. So Ty Cobb played in the teens, and by the time Phil Rizzuto played in the 50s, the game had become a lot less aggressive and feisty. I mean, Ty Cobb he was famous for sliding with his spikes up, metal spikes, so that people would get out of the way or be slashed. And Ty Cobb said that Phil Rizzuto and Stan Musial were two of the few players of his day that could hang with the old time ball players. In other words, he was basically saying Phil Rizzuto is a tough guy. Hilariously, Phil Rizzuto was also a tiny little guy. He was like 5'6" or something. And he, loved to bunt. That was his favorite play, was the bunt. But he later, this is where I knew Phil Rizzuto from, was he became an announcer for the New York Yankees in the, I guess, probably the late 60s to, I don't know when, the 80s, the 90s. But when I was growing up and I listened to or watched Yankee games, which I did obsessively until I realized how boring baseball was when I started playing football, it was Phil Rizzuto, Bill White, and Frank Messer were the announcers. And there were other guys. Bobby Mercer became Fran Healy at one point. But those three guys were like the defining voices of my childhood. And Phil Rizzuto was so weird and rambly when he was calling games that At a certain point, two sports writers for the Village Voice took audio recordings of his calls and broke them up into metered verse and published it as a book of poems by Phil Rizzuto called "Oh Holy Cow." Like, that was his catchphrase, was "Holy Cow." And they published, and that made me laugh so hard when I was younger, and I'd completely forgotten about it because this was, you know, 25 years ago or something. But he did. He just had such a weird, rambly style. He would mention people who had sent him a lasagna the night before, or, you know, what he had done the day before while he was playing golf, and then still have to call the game. So anyway, I looked on the internet for a poem by Phil Rizzuto, and I found one, and it's actually kind of sad because this was a poem written right after Thurman Munson died in 1979. Thurman Munson was a great catcher for the New York Yankees in the 70s, and it would have been an all-time great, still they say the greatest offensive catcher in the history of the game. But he was also, he piloted his own plane, and in the summer of 1979, he crashed and died. Okay, so here's a poem by Phil Rizzuto, and it's called "The Bridge." I guess, well, this is another funny thing about this, is that these guys, not only did they break up his words into verse, but they titled each poem. So this one is called "The Bridge." Two balls and a strike. You know what they had on TV today, White? Bridge on the River Kwai. Everyone should have gotten an Academy Award for that movie. I don't know how many times I've seen it. About 40 times. Alec Guinness. William Holden. 3-1 the count. I just heard somebody whistle. You know that song? That's what they whistle. Nobody out. And he pops it up. May 5th, 1987, New York at Chicago, Joe Niekro pitching to Carlton Fisk. Anyway, I think those are hilarious because he just goes in and out of the game versus whatever thought has popped into his head. And he's not analyzing anything. He's just, I saw a movie on TV today. He's like the Jamie of announcing, of broadcasting. And the other thing I thought of about Phil Rizzuto, which I totally forgot about, is if you know the song "Paradise by the Dashboard Lights" by Meatloaf, that's Phil Rizzuto who does the play call in the middle of that song. So go listen to that song. Think of Phil Rizzuto. And so anyway, like I was saying, you should go buy the book. It's called "Oh, Holy Cow." Imagine I just spend the whole podcast plugging books. Folks, this has been one for the ages. If you're still listening, I salute you. I thank you. And I am grateful for you. And I hope you have a great week. We will see you next time on The Long Shot. Jamie, try to come up with something better for your checking in next time. Joe, I hope you are here. Amber, we'll see you soon. I know you're probably still in Hawaii. Lucky you. All right. See you guys.